right, this is Gary Parrish from TriviaSports.com. It is now Monday, February 16th, and this is the Eye on College Basketball Podcast, joined by Matt Norlander and Sam Vecenie. Got lots of stuff to get to. We're going to get to some of it, but I want to start with the big news from Saturday, and that's that John Calipari and Bo Ryan are both finalists for the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. Calipari, of course, has taken three different schools to number one rankings and Final Four, specifically UMass, Memphis, and Kentucky. He's won a national title. His resume is probably one of the most impressive resumes in modern history. The only blemishes, of course, are being that two of his Final Fours have been vacated. Bo Ryan has completed 13 seasons at Wisconsin. He's made 13 NCAA tournaments, never finished worse than fourth in the Big Ten. He's about to win his fourth Big Ten title, went to last season's Final Four, won four Division III national titles at Platteville. And so, Norlander, I'll start with you. Will both men be inducted at the Final Four? Should both men be inducted?
Yeah, this is, I'll say no that both.
What?
I don't know. Well,
I agree with that.
Do you have the full list in front of you, GP?
No.
It's kind of a weak year for what it's worth. I think like the best finalist is probably Dikembe Mutombo out of the NBA guys.
Wow. Well, I mean, it is possible. I would love if they both did, and they were both there for the Final Four. That would be really cool if that happened.
Which is possible.
It is. It's definitely possible because both are on track, obviously, to get number one seeds at this point. And the crazy thing,
you could actually argue that they're the two most overwhelming teams at this moment. Is that fair?
Oh yeah,
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 without a doubt.
Right.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And there have been nine teams in the past 34 years, basically, that have started 25-0, and this Kentucky team is one of them. And Calipari is responsible for 33% of those teams, which is just nuts because UMass did it in 96, Memphis did it with Derrick Rose in 08, and now Kentucky's done it. Both are deserving. Both are going to get in. First time, I'm only saying no because I feel like with the Naismith Hall of Fame, there's a little bit of the football side of it where – just because you're getting honored for the first time doesn't mean you're necessarily getting in. And with Cal, for whatever reason, I feel like he might still be seen as young enough. He hasn't this is not my opinion, but just in general, with the two vacated Final Fours, there might be a sense that he has to wait another year or two before it happens.
Yeah, I get that. I don't understand making people wait if you...
Neither do I.
If you already... Like, baseball does this. I don't understand...
Baseball's the worst with this, actually.
It just... It's ridiculous. Like, if you don't think somebody belongs in the final in the Hall of Fame, by all means, don't put them in the Hall of Fame. I'm not trying to debate that. It's a subjective deal for a lot of people. But if you go, yeah, a Hall of Famer, but not right now, maybe in a couple years. Like, what does that even mean? I'll never understand that. And so I suspect that there'll be some pushback on John because of the vacated Final Fours and his just reputation in general. Whether it's fair or not, it's there. It exists. And I guess let me ask you this, Sam. Do you care about that? Should people care about that? Should people look at John Calipari and go, obviously great, obviously accomplished, but two vacated Final Fours, and I'm not putting that in the Hall of Fame. Does that matter to you? Should it matter to people?
I don't think so. I mean, you have a guy in Spencer Haywood who's up with him who, you know, like did, he was like a drug addict essentially, and while he was playing professional basketball. And like, that's fine.
That's impressive,
like,
actually.
Yeah, you know.
And, like, that's hard to do. It's hard to be a drug addict like, and totally be awesome at basketball.
I mean, I don't fall as far as like the Peter King thing where he's like totally ignoring the Darren Sharper case.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
As far as Darren Sharper's candidacy for next year. But at the same time, like with someone like John Calipari, where the issues off the court like aren't really that vast, you're talking about like vacated Final Fours due to impermissible benefits. Like, I don't really care about that. Like, that is what it is. John Calipari is absolutely a deserving candidate for the Final Four. He should probably get in this year. The guy that I was a little bit more skeptical on until reading up on his Platteville days was Bo Ryan.
Right.
I was kind of shocked that he got nominated after only, like you said, I think 13. This is his 14th year in Wisconsin. You know, I just, like, didn't really understand that he had 730 wins. All of these great successful teams that were that won four national titles or whatever. But I can see the committee holding him off for a year too, just because, you know, he's only been a Division I coach for 14 years. He only has like, what, maybe 300 wins at Wisconsin, somewhere in that area.
Yeah.
Here's your candidate list. You have JoJo White, Dikembe Mutombo, Lisa Leslie, Kevin Johnson, Spencer Haywood, Tim Hardaway among the players. And then you have Lita Andrews and Robert Hughes, who are high school coaches. And then Dick Bavetta is a referee. And then your college and NBA coaches are Calipari Ryan and Bill Fitch.
My guess is that throwback.
Yeah, my guess is that I think JoJo White should get in. I think that Kevin Johnson should get in. Mutombo should get in. All the players are deserving, and my guess is only one of the two college coaches gets in, whether it's Calipari or Ryan. I don't know which one.
I guess I would say this: like, you know, Mutombo belongs in the Hall of Fame. I guess KJ does as well.
I don't think KJ does.
I don't know. Okay, here's my point. None of those guys had the impact on college basketball of John Calipari and arguably of Bo Ryan. I mean, had the impact on professional basketball.
I'd agree with that regarding Calipari.
Like the impact Dikembe Mutombo had on the NBA is dwarfed by the impact John Calipari's had on college basketball and arguably Bo Ryan. And so that would be my whole thing. And just to the vacated Final Four stuff, because this is going to come up. Like, this will be your first take / talk radio debate as this stuff gets a little closer and people run out of stuff to argue about. Should John Calipari be in the Hall of Fame with vacated Final Fours? Jim Boeheim's got NCAA troubles. He's in. Larry Brown has had NCAA troubles and has them right now. He's in. Roy Williams is going through it right now. He's in.
Tark
is in. Coach K should have had NCAA issues because of Corey Maggette and or Lance Thomas. Like, either one.
Right.
If Marcus Camby can get you in trouble at UMass, Corey Maggette ought to be able to get you in trouble at Duke. If Marcus Camby can get you in trouble at UMass, Lance Thomas having, $100,000 worth of jewelry ought to be able to get you in trouble at Duke. The NCAA just smooth let it slide for whatever reason. We don't need to debate that again. But
right.
So as long as we acknowledge everything I've just said in the past 60 seconds is true, then holding a totally different guy out because of vacated Final Four seems a little forget whether it seems silly. It seems silly and is obviously hypocritical, right? I mean, would anybody argue with that?
Yeah, no, I would agree with that entirely. To me, the only I think Cal is number two. Lisa Leslie is like an all-time ridiculous player at the college and pro level as a female player. In terms of, she is one of what, five household women's basketball players, household names for women's hoops players ever.
Yep. Lisa Leslie, Shoni Schimmel.
No, don't even go there with Shoni Schimmel.
She is so good.
Shoni Schimmel's got a good decade ahead of her.
Hey,
before
Shoni Schimmel showed up well in that celebrity game.
Dude, I've been knowing about Shoni Schimmel for a while.
she was gunning in that celebrity game.
Dude, there is me and my friends who gamble. There's nothing really to gamble on in the summer except for baseball or the WNBA. So, I'm not even joking. I have the WNBA league pass.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Sam was not with us in Vegas last year.
Oh, what did I tell you? How much money did I win on the Phoenix Mercury and the Minnesota Lynx back to back?
Exactly.
Everything I lose at the Blackjack table, I just make it up on the Phoenix Mercury and the Minnesota Lynx. Shoni Schimmel plays for Atlanta, so the Eastern Conference is the only side playing. Sometimes the Mercury and Lynx don't play every night, so sometimes you got to get on that Shoni Schimmel.
How did I know by me infecting Lisa Leslie this would turn into a Shoni Schimmel show?
Shoni Schimmel is the best. Shoni Schimmel, her coach hates her so much in Atlanta, they won't even start her, even though she's so clearly the best player, because she will not pass the ball. Like, she is, she's the Russell Westbrook of the WNBA. I love her so much. She is my favorite player. I've been trying to get a Shoni Schimmel jersey since the summer. I'm not joking at all. I will joke around later, but I'm not joking at all right now. You can't get one because she's of Native American heritage, and so she's become like this Native American phenomenon. Like, you know, in terms of like, she has a huge following, and literally since summer, you go on WNBA website or the Atlanta website, any of the websites, the only thing available is a double XL. You can't get anything normally that's for a normal sized human. because it's all completely sold out. But I would kill somebody for a Shoney Schimmel jersey.
Well, you know what? You get that double XL, you got yourself a Shoney Schimmel blanket. That's
I will have it. You know what? I'll take a Shoney Schimmel blanket at this point. All right. So what were you saying? Anyway, I just wanted to talk about Shoney Schimmel for a minute.
I was just saying Calipari should definitely be in this year. You need 18 to 24. There's no minimum like the Pro Football Hall of Fame where they got to get in at least five every year. And it might be five and only five. I can't quite remember. But anyway, 18 to 24, it could be no one this year, but that's not going to happen. But I think only Leslie is the clear cut in terms of impact, I think, overall. And you could even argue that Cal's had more impact. I think that's fair. But Leslie is such a massive figure within women's basketball that I think she's the only one that supersedes Cal. Bavetta's probably going to get in eventually, a beloved official. Hardaway I would put in. But yeah, basically it would be terrific if this happened and they were both, you know, Bo and Cal were at the Final Four. And for Cal, it would be pretty momentous. Just, you know, we discussed this plenty on Friday, actually, before we even knew this was going to happen, what it would mean to him to get that kind of honor. And, you know, that's another certain level of acceptance within the game. And to think about what John Calipari was perceived as, you know, as he left the Nets and went to Memphis and to what he's done since then is pretty remarkable.
Do we have a date that we know where Shoney Schimmel will be eligible for the Hall of Fame for the first time?
Oh, what is it? 25 years removed from your first game or something. I don't have the date. I'm sorry. I don't have Schimmel's dossier in front of me, I'm afraid.
We'll make sure to look that up. Let's change gears for a minute. Okay, so John Solomon, our colleague over at CBSSports.com, had an interesting story posted Friday after we actually recorded the podcast about how Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott wants to bring back freshman ineligibility. It sounds like Bob Bowlsby from the Big 12 is on board too. What in the world? Like, what is, of all the things that there are issues in college athletics, why are these two seemingly smart? At least I know Larry Scott's smart. I'm not sure Bowlsby's smart. I don't know him, but I know Larry Scott's smart. Why are these two, let's just give Bowlsby the benefit of the doubt. I'm not interested in arguing about it. Why are these two seemingly smart people, like, actually speaking publicly about this? So this idea that seems so stupid to everybody else in the world, why is this? What are they doing?
You're gonna have to take that, Norlander. Because it's too stupid for my like comprehension level. It's
the dumbest thing
to fathom.
It's the most random WTF story I think I've seen at the college level in basically since they were debating whether to go to 96 or not, and that was more intentional. Let it leak to the public, see how reaction was.
Yep.
This can't be the same thing because there's no way college sports benefits. And I mean, we are just so far removed from this. Even, I mean, the toothpaste is out of the tube. The horses have left the barn. This is not going to happen. I don't see how they think this could possibly be voted into effect, work on any sort of level. College basketball would be damaged. Not beyond repair, I guess, but I mean, it was considered ridiculous even in the early 70s, late 60s, when this was still customary and freshmen played on JV teams and only got 3 years of eligibility. It should be a non-starter, and for Larry Scott of all commissioners to at least be imploring these kind of possibilities because there might be some sort of back-end benefits to obviously leagues and commissioners. I think it's incredibly foolish. I don't know why we're even I don't even know how this even comes up. Who's pining for this kind of stuff?
Yeah, I have an idea on why he would do this.
I think I know too, but I'll listen to you.
Michelle
first.
Roberts came out and said earlier this week, I want to say on maybe Friday or Thursday with all of the All-Star festivities, that the NBA Players Association will not really consider the one-and-done rule. They like the one-and-done rule. They don't want to even look at any other options, really. She said it's here to stay for a while. So this could be one of those things where it just could be preemptive posturing parts.
I think there's – well, let me say. It seems like the timeline, Larry Scott would have suggested this before – she even said that. So I don't think it's necessarily a reaction to that, but it seems to me like they've decided that the one and done player is a problem in college athletics. And let's be more specific, in college basketball. And so, you know, if we'll make them ineligible, which is code, I think, for they can go do something else. If you don't genuinely have an interest in college, then we don't want you in college. And so there's just no scenario where Jahlil Okafor is going to go to Duke for a year and sit out before entering the NBA draft. It would be stupid for him to do. Like, no reasonable person would advise it. So basically what they're saying is we're going to keep the Derrick Roses and the Jahlil Okafors and the Kevin Durant's and the Greg Oden's and the Jabari Parker's and Andrew Wiggins. We're going to set up a system that prevents them from coming to school. But why? Like, okay, fine. I hear you. Now explain to me why that's actually good for anybody. Why is it good for Wiggins? Actually, you could maybe argue it's good. It's fine for them because, like, they're going to be millionaires. But I don't think
they're going to go get paid overseas.
Right. Yeah. So, like, you could even argue reasonably you might be doing the players a favor. But, like, what is the point? Like, who are you hurting, really? And what are you accomplishing, actually? I bet you even somebody as smart as Larry Scott couldn't intelligently answer those questions. Who are you? What are you accomplishing by doing? Let's say, hey, you're in charge, executive order, you're in charge and you can do an executive order and you do it. Freshmen are ineligible to play Division I athletics or to play Division I men's basketball. What have you just accomplished? You've kept people who you think don't want to be on a college campus actually off of a college campus. First off, most 18-year-olds that I know aren't really that interested in school. I know I wasn't. I was interested. I went to school because I felt like it was something I had to do. And I showed up at classes sometimes because I knew I needed to. But I was more interested in the social aspect of college and other things. I was more interested in whatever parties went along with college than I was, learning biology. And so, first off, 18-year-olds don't know what they want. So to just sort of put it out there like that, I don't think these kids care about college. Well, a lot of kids don't care about college when they're that age. Beyond that, I spent some time at Duke in the preseason. Jahlil Okafor was talking about how he's been to soccer games, he's been to volleyball games, he actually goes to all of his classes. They live in a dorm. Jahlil Okafor and Tyus Jones live in a dorm with other Duke students. It's not like some athletic dorm. Like, they live down the hall from just like normal students, and they are very much a part of that campus community. I'm not going to sit here and pretend they're normal, because there's nothing normal about them. They're going to be millionaires in a couple of months. But they are very much a part of that college community, and they are seemingly getting something from it, even if they never actually graduate from college. And so I just don't understand how you conclude that Duke would be better off or without Jahlil and Tyus Jones and Justice Winslow, or that any college would be better off without people who are contributing or at the very least getting something out of the experience. And then beyond that, certainly the sport in and of itself isn't more interesting without those guys. So, like, I just don't even know where this comes from. If I were listing 50 problems with college athletics, I could get to 50 pretty easily before I ever even approach this. And then if somebody did bring this up, I would shoot it down at me. I just don't get it. Like, it's so random. And it's not just random. It's random and ignorant, I think.
Yeah.
It's dumb. Here's the other thing, too. Sometimes you have kids like Jared Sullinger, who was a top three recruit coming out of high school, who ended up staying for a second year of college.
Right.
Who actually wanted to be at his university and wanted to stay there and be around the school. He loved college so much. You're going to convince kids that the college experience is worth staying for if you let them come for this one and done idea. It's just so stupid on so many levels. Single level.
The commissioners are kind of tying this to academics. Swofford is also quoted in Solomon's piece. I'm just going to read you this quote. I mean, to me, they're just so far stuck up their own you-know-whats. I can't even believe this. Here's what Swofford said. I don't think it's looked upon as radical an idea as it seemed to people 5 years ago or 10 years ago because it makes so much sense educationally. We're in a period now where everybody is trying to get a hold of the student athlete experience and a recommitment, if you will, to balance academics and athletics. This is fairyland, okay?
Yeah, and first off, you know what? F all these guys for like pretending that education is what's important when they actively shift their conference members so that they're traveling. They got girls' soccer teams traveling all over the damn country out of their region so that they can make more money off their ACC network or Big Ten network or SEC network or Pac-12 network. Like, And they'll schedule games around TV slots if it means midnight on a Tuesday of a school week. If right. it, if you know, they'll play games at 5 p.m. if TV says so. They'll put people on the road. And you really want to care about athletics? Academics and education. Let me tell you who does? The Ivy League. You want to know why? They play Friday, Sunday. Is that the schedule? Friday, Saturday.
Right?
Friday, Saturday. Okay. So they miss a minimal amount of school. When any of these conference commissioners say no to ESPN and say no to CBS and say no to Fox Sports 1, and they say, you know what? We're not playing Mondays and Tuesdays and Wednesdays and Thursdays at all hours of the night, because we have student athletes who need to be in class the next morning and who don't need to be playing, road games 1,500 miles from home on a school night. When anybody stands up and say that, then I'll believe it when you start talking about how much you care about the educational experience. Till then, you can miss me with all this stuff.
Yeah, and they put these kids on the road, too, during midterms, during finals. Like, it's nothing. Like, they don't even consider that aspect of it. They just try and find what day of the year will be most successful for them monetarily.
It's amazing.
It's just totally absurd.
No, it's amazing to me. Like, these guys will talk, and they're all, you can't become who these people have become without being smart on some level, right? And so, it's amazing to me. These smart people sound so dumb, and they don't seem to understand it. How can you, and beyond all that, how can you on one hand, and this is what you'd hear all the time before we had a college football playoff. Well, it would ruin tradition. You know what ruins tradition? Taking Texas A&M out of the Big 12. That ruins tradition. Taking Nebraska out of the Big 12. That ruins tradition. When do we you care about tradition there, but not over here. You care about education here, but not when ESPN wants to do a 24-hour marathon and make you play make your student athletes play at 5 a.m. Why don't you care about education then? Why? How can you travel somebody across the country for a non-league game made for television, during finals week? Why don't you care about education then? So, unless you really want to, start playing, tell the TV networks that you don't want their money just so that you can play on a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night or Thursday night because you care about your student athletes' actual education. Once you take that move, I'll believe anything else you say about it. But until you take something like that, again, stop it already.
Yeah, and for Larry Scott, who is considered the most progressive mind at the conference commissioner level of any guy in the sport, in the NCAA, this would be an extremely damaging move if you were to really try and pursue and push this in some sort of significant way, because it's retroactive in its nature. We're talking about something that's well over 40 years old since it was abolished, this freshman ineligibility rule. I don't see it happening.
It won't happen.
But for it to have gotten to this point where Solomon is dedicating 2,500 words, and it's a very good story, and it's extremely well reported by our colleague, and you've got a lot of commissioners in that story giving it serious thought and pontificating, it's ridiculous that it's gotten to that point, but certainly worth addressing.
Yeah, no, and at some point it won't. It'll fail because somebody smart will just step in and say this is the most ridiculous idea ever. But the idea that you could be like Larry, why would you want this attached to your name? All it's leading to is people mocking you. So I don't even I fundamentally don't get it. It's something you read and you think it must be a joke, and yet these guys seem very, very serious about it. I don't know. Again, of all the issues that college athletics faces, the idea that Jahlil Okafor is on campus at Duke is not one of them. And the idea, that seemingly smart people are suggesting as much, again, just doesn't make any sense to any reasonable person I know. Let's move on. Norlander was, I think, a little iffy on it last week, but Sam and I think both thought Virginia would be fine without Justin Anderson. And the Cavs are 2-0 without Justin Anderson, and that's fine, I guess. But they've been down at the half in both games since he had surgery. First to NC State midweek in a game they ultimately won by 4 points, and then to Wake Forest on Saturday in a game they won by a point. So are we still cool with what we said last Monday, Sam, or is this obviously going to cost Virginia a game or two or three?
Like I said, their schedule is just so easy that I don't know that it's going to cost them more than a game. It probably will cost them a game eventually, but I don't know that it's going to cost them more than that, just because, like I said, they don't have anything really difficult until Louisville in the last game of the year. They have Pitt tonight at home, which is probably their toughest game outside of that Louisville game. And I think there are reasons for legitimate concern because that Justin Anderson injury, like, their offense has no spacing now whatsoever. Like, Brogdon and Perantis don't really have any lanes to try and slash into the paint and get guys other looks. And plus, Evan Nolte was hurt on Sunday or Saturday, I believe. And he's another guy that can space the floor. So that's going to be a legitimate problem, because guys or teams are just going to kind of sag off of their shooters and let them kind of go free from 3-point range. But, you know, Anderson's going to be back eventually. I'm not real concerned, even if they drop a game or two.
Norlander, you still, like, I think I'm still where I was last Monday. Like, it's obviously not ideal to lose what the guy a lot of people think was your best player. But their resume to date, combined with the schedule going forward, like, they're going to be a one seed, just because even if they lose a game or two, their resume is still going to be one of the top four resumes in the country, isn't it?
Yeah, I would. I know I kind of was doubting their one seed, likelihood to a certain degree 2 weeks back. They're in the two spot right now, in my opinion. You go Kentucky, then Virginia. It's a matter of when Justin gets back, and then if his shooting form is back, and you know, with him almost immediately. Virginia would obviously want him back in the ACC tournament. You don't want to have one of those situations. Like, Kyrie, didn't he come back round of 64?
That's the issue. It's not how they do without Justin Anderson. You know, it's how they do when they have to bring him back in, because they brought,
like, right away. Like, I'm pretty sure Kyrie was out. He had that toe injury, and then he came back for the tournament.
And they
that
lost.
Was the year. That was actually the year that Derek Williams in Arizona beat Duke in the Sweet 16, I think. Anyway, Kentucky the one, Virginia at the second number one. I'd say Gonzaga right now, although, man, Gonzaga, and then you've got Arizona, you've got Villanova, Duke, Kansas, and even they'd have to run the table, but Utah's 20-4. So there are still enough teams in the mix right there. Virginia, in my opinion, has separated itself from the rest of the fact that it doesn't have Anderson. And I think if I neglected to mention Wisconsin there, they're obviously in the mix as well. They could have a similar situation where Wisconsin really only has one loss of note, because the Rutgers won. While it will hurt them in a certain way, Kaminsky wasn't there for that game. Rutgers has not won since that game, by the way. Very intriguing, you know, race toward the number one seeds. And we still have a full month to go. Yesterday marked 1 month exactly till Selection Sunday. So plenty to play out here, but I do think Virginia is going to wind up with a one seed unless, you know, the bottom came out and it dropped three games, which I just don't think is going to happen.
Do you guys care about conference races at all? Because if you do, like, we don't really have any. Like, Virginia has a two-game lead in the ACC. Kansas has a two-game lead in the Big 12. Villanova has a two-game lead in the Big East. Wisconsin's got a three-game lead in the Big 10. Kentucky's running away with the SEC. Like, the
it's the Pac-12, really.
It's the Pac-12.
Yeah. And the Mountain West, I mean,
Pac-12, American, if you care about those.
Yeah, I mean, the Mountain West is intriguing. I get intrigued by, the one thing I almost never care about is which league is better than the other league. I don't really care much about that stuff. But within the leagues themselves, like, Purdue to me is just strange as anything. Like, I didn't think Purdue would be anywhere near in position to be second place in the Big Ten. The Big Ten's overall weirdness intrigues me. But you're right. In terms of league races, there's not a lot of drama there. If Utah can beat Arizona upcoming, that would be massive. That game is at the end of the month. And that would –
That's the one – like, here's the thing. Like, everybody's in love with Arizona. And I get it. Like, they were awesome yesterday. And they're super talented. And it won't surprise me if they're in the Final Four. Utah's probably going to win the Pac-12.
Because
the game's in Salt Lake.
Yes, the game is in Salt Lake. You're right. So Utah should win that game. I mean, if they do that,
If you had to pick a Pac-12 champion right now, wouldn't you pick Utah based on nothing more than they play each other once more, and that game's in Salt Lake?
Listen, you're talking to a guy that until about a week and a half ago had Stanford as the second best team in the league, and I have offered mea culpa this multiple times on Twitter, and I'm doing it here on the podcast. I've got no problem admitting when I'm wrong, which is often, but with that as background, I will still say Arizona. Like both teams, though, and yes, Utah is a distant chance for a one seed, but if it were to win the Pac-12 and enough happened around them, like if Utah ran the table, it would have a shot at a one. I don't think that'll happen. But yes, no, it's in very good shape, and it's kind of one of those teams that I think people might be hesitant to embrace because we get one of these almost every year, a team that gets really good and they don't have a history of, you know, in recent years being, you know, 1, 2, 3, or 4 seed. You know, this team was brutal 4 years ago, and Larry Krzyzewski has turned it around in immense ways. They're very fun. DeLon Wright, I think, is going to be an awesome pro. But I think overall, since people aren't familiar with Utah, they don't see a lot of their games, it could be one of those classic 2 seeds or 3 seeds that people just don't take seriously because they simply haven't been on the radar in recent years.
Oh, I think they're absolutely good enough to get to a Final Four. And let me be clear, because Arizona fans will start tweeting me, I think Arizona's great, and I think, you know, on a neutral court, I'd take Arizona over Utah. But given that they're both sitting here with 2 losses right now and the determining game is going to be played in Salt Lake City, like I think Utah is probably more likely than not to be at least a co-Pac-12 champion, which is not something most people would have anticipated back in November. I think those two teams, you know what? Like I won't be surprised if the Pac-12 ends up a little bit like the SEC last year in the sense that there's not a whole lot of quality in it. But we could look up and have 2 Pac-12 schools in the Final Four, just like Florida and Kentucky last year, and it would not shock me at all.
I think that's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
Yeah. So we talked about tonight, Virginia is playing, also on the court, Kansas. They're at West Virginia, and I looked at their schedule. As long as you assume Kansas doesn't lose at Allen Fieldhouse, you know, because Kansas doesn't lose at Allen Fieldhouse, they win tonight at West Virginia. They only have 2 road games left. They basically, if you don't think they're going to lose at Allen Fieldhouse, are going to secure tonight a share of the 11th straight Big 12 title. And I know on the surface you go, hey, at West Virginia, that's tough. I don't know how many people have looked closely at West Virginia's schedule.
You are loving hating Bob Huggins this year, GP.
I love Bob Huggins. What are you talking about? I don't wish ill of Bob Huggins ever. I think college basketball is more fun when Huggs has a great team. They started 14-1. They've gone 5-5 since then. They haven't beaten a likely NCAA tournament team in a month. They've only, you know, their best win all year is Oklahoma. After that, it's Wofford. Again, they're 5-5 in their last 10. One of those is a blowout loss at home to Baylor. They're coming off a blowout at Iowa State. Like, they haven't been very good for a while. And it actually, you know, I don't know that they were ever very good. I mean, like, so I won't be surprised if Kansas goes in there tonight and wins.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think they're going to, actually. That was my pick of the night in the viewer's
guide. All right,
guide.
There we go.
So,
we got
wow. So yeah, well, you hey, expect good, West good, Virginia good, to win God, this game.
I know, right? You're on a...
Like, yeah, I'm on a legendary hot streak right
now. What are you going to do the other night? Denzel hit a, you know, it's not really a ridiculous shot. It was a wide open shot, but
it's a wide open fadeaway three.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but
it was what it was.
But absolutely.
Oh, so wrong.
West Virginia, though, I mean, they beat NC State earlier this year. That's a good win. They beat Wofford. They beat Connecticut. They have a lot of those, like, borderline wins. But outside of that, like, they don't have anyone. They've lost 3 home games already this year to LSU, Iowa State, and Baylor. And Kansas is better than all 3 of those teams. It's kind of a logical fallacy to assume that, like, since those 3 teams beat West Virginia at home, that Kansas can beat them at home, too. But
sure,
Kansas is a considerably better team than West Virginia is, but they also have the ball handlers to be able to break the press.
Yep.
And they have the rebounding to be able to kind of slow down the offensive rebounding game of West Virginia, because that's how West Virginia gets all of their points basically.
Yeah.
It's just off of the offensive glass and with Juwan State and slashing. And you know, Kansas does have they're in the middle of the pack in defensive rebounding rate nationally, but you know, with Cliff Alexander, and I think that's going to be improving, and with hopefully Landon Lucas playing like he did on Saturday, that's going to be improving. So yeah, I think Kansas can go in and beat West Virginia and Morgantown and pretty much end the Big 12 race.
It would pretty much end the Big 12 race. Last thing before we get out of here, I just sort of got into this on Twitter yesterday. Somebody asked me about SMU. If it had Emmanuel Mudiay, like, would they be a Final Four contender if they had Emmanuel Mudiay? And it's funny because we had Larry Brown on Inside College Basketball last week after Dean Smith died. He was nice enough to come on and talk about Coach Smith, and he was great. But one of the things he actually said when we were, you know, speaking about this particular team is he said, you know, we're pretty good. The kids are playing well. And he said, if we had Emmanuel, we'd be top 3. He actually said top 3 or 4 in the country if we had Emmanuel. And I don't think that's really a stretch. I think, and I said this back in the offseason, like Emmanuel Mudiay could have done for SMU what Derrick Rose did for Memphis. In other words, to, you know, come into a veteran roster and be that difference maker. The thing that takes you from being a Sweet 16 type of team to a Final Four type of team. And I'm just curious what you guys think about that. Norlander first. Emmanuel Mudiay on this SMU roster, are we talking about SMU as a top 4 or 5 team in the country?
No, but we're talking about him as a top 10. SMU is 21-5. If they had Mudiay, let's give them, I mean.
Keep in mind, for some of those losses, they didn't have Marcus Kennedy either.
Right. So, yeah, so they win. Let's say they win over Arkansas back in November. They wouldn't have beat Gonzaga. They wouldn't have beaten Indiana. They've been swept by Cincy, so maybe give them one. So they have 3 losses. Yeah, they'd be in the top 10 at that point. And, you know, given who Mudiay is, the kind of player he is, he would probably, you would think, be in the top 10 for National Player of the Year consideration. And this would be huge for that league. The Americans just been an afterthought for most of the year, even though SMU has turned out to be pretty decent, and more than decent. You know, Tulsa's been decent and done well in that league. But, you know, Cincinnati's just okay. UConn's way down. Memphis is not doing nearly enough to make the tournament. The American could have used a team like SMU with Larry and with Mudiay to have this huge kind of year to kind of hold it up in similar ways to what Memphis did a lot of years in CUSA with Cal. But he's not there. I still don't quite know how much I trust SMU. If they still continue at their current pace and finish out the league, win the American title, I think they'll have a decent shot at like a 5 seed. To me, they kind of might fit the mold of a perfect 12-5 upset. But if he were there, it would have been a lot more fun. But that's the breaks. Now they don't have him. They didn't have Marcus Kennedy to start the year. They don't have Keith Frazier for the rest of the year. So I think these things will certainly have some sort of impact. And while they might finish with a respectable seed and get in, which they failed to do last year after almost everyone thought they'd be in, I'm not totally buying them as a reliable odds-on favorite to reach the second weekend.
Sam, I think if you put Kennedy and Mudiay on the – and I know we're just playing pretend here, but if you take Kennedy, Marcus Kennedy and Emmanuel Mudiay, put them on the roster from the beginning, I think they lose at Gonzaga. They lose at Indiana. I don't think they lose
at Indiana.
Okay, well, they might win that. Okay. I mean, I think they're sitting here 20
– They lost that game by 6. I think that if you put Kennedy and Mudiay on there, that's worth it.
Okay, so they're 24-2, you know, 20 – you know, maybe 23-3. Like I actually do. They'd be ranked right up there with Gonzaga right now.
I agree with Norlander. I'd say they're top 10, not necessarily top 5. I don't know that I'd put them in the same class as Kentucky, Wisconsin, Gonzaga, like those teams. But you know, they'd probably be on the same level as Villanova. Emmanuel Mudiay is so good.
I know.
Like watching him operate in the pick and roll, just like on tape, anything that you see, even from his play in China, which is essentially over. He was just so good. He knows exactly how to attack a defense. He has excellent vision. He's tall. He's going to be able to get into the lane basically against any collegiate defender due to his like blend of size and strength and speed. Like he is what we all thought Andrew Harrison was coming into college as far as being able to get into the lane at will. Like he's just faster than Harrison. Like he can kind of, he has better first step. He's just able to get into the lane whenever he wants. And he has the pull up jumper to make defenses respect his ability to get to the rim. So I would say they'd be a Final Four contender with Emmanuel Mudiay. But yeah, like you said, it's pretend world.
What'd you guys make of the SNL 40 thing last night?
You know, I tweeted that, you know, the first sketch was the best. It was a faux game show. There was a decent SNL digital short, and the rest was just okay filler. So in many ways, it was just perfectly emblematic of SNL in every single episode where you've got kind of one memorable thing. Although Bill Murray was great.
Bill Murray was great.
Overall, it was pretty good. I got to say my wife was let down because the day before, NSYNC had tweeted out, "It's good to be back together again, hashtag SNL40. Ooh. So she was like so ready for some sort of NSYNC reunion to happen on SNL, which seemed random as anything to begin with. that didn't happen, thankfully. But overall, it was good. And Eddie Murphy's thing was super awkward and weird.
Yeah. I'm sort of down with, like, you put something like, whether it's the Grammys 1 week or SNL 40 the next, like Sunday night, like live television, any sort of thing is like cool to me. So like I'm down with it. Like we sat here and watched it. I thought the Jeopardy skit was perfect. Bill Murray was terrific. And then yeah, it had some misses. The Eddie Murphy thing I think was the most disappointing. Like he clearly didn't want any part of it. And if you're not even going to play along, like don't even show up, right? Like most of the other people came back and they played along. Like who's a bigger star than Bill Murray? And Bill Murray came back and he played along. Mike Myers played along. And I just don't get why you'd come back and then not and then just be difficult and awkward and I don't know. Like, do you know the backstory to all that?
I've actually been dying to read that book. There's a whole oral history of just the SNL in the 70s and 80s and 90s, and I haven't gotten to it. I don't know the back history with that, but I do know a lot of the back history with Chevy Chase. And, you know, if Chevy can at least show up and
well, he didn't do much either.
Half-ass it to a degree.
Right.
And even Chevy, like, who is liked by, you would, based off reports, I mean, he is just not a well-liked person whatsoever.
Sure.
If even Chevy can do that. The Eddie thing was just, you can get to the backstory if you want, but to me it was weird because you had Chris Rock, who I find, listen, I'm just a tad GP. You got a few years on me, so Eddie was more part of your childhood and growing up than me. I just kind of missed him to a large degree. To me, Chris Rock is 5 times funnier than Eddie Murphy. And so when you have Chris Rock giving this fawning monologue for basically 5 minutes and Eddie's right backstage, can hear everything, he walks out, spends half the time just encouraging the crowd to applaud. Like it was so bizarre that it almost seemed like something was screwed up, and I don't know if it was intentionally screwed up for him. I don't know. It was really weird.
Like I tweeted this last night. Like I grew up with Eddie Murphy. I don't know that I was supposed to have grown up with Eddie Murphy. Like I don't know where my parents were, but like, you know, I was a teenager, like watching Delirious and watching Raw, and then, you know, then you got Harlem Nights and Coming to America, and like Eddie Murphy was, it's a bit cliche, but he was the most quotable dude in America for teenagers of my, you know, guys who are my age now, when we were teenagers, like nobody quoted Eddie, you know, anybody more than they quoted Eddie Murphy. And so the idea that he could go from that guy, the guy doing Delirious and Raw, to like basically being a children's movie person is all kind of weird on another level. But the backstory, Sam, tell me if you know it to be different. Apparently, and I don't remember this, I just sort of read it over the past week. When David Spade was a cast member, they were doing, I don't know if it was a weekend update or something, but there was some sort of crack about, you know, have you ever seen a fallen star? And they threw up a picture of Eddie Murphy.
I do remember that.
Okay. And Murphy's thing, first off, like it's a joke. So like, just, you know, that's what the show does. Like, you know, yeah. I mean, geez, Seinfeld made a Brian Williams joke last night on NBC for crying out loud. Right. Mm-hmm. So like, whatever. But beyond that, Eddie Murphy's point of view apparently was, yo, I'm supposed to be one of you. I saved that show and you're clowning my career. Like, to hell with everybody. And it seems like I get it. I get how you might be bothered by that. Nobody likes to be the butt of a joke, but it seems like you'd get over it at some point. And yet, by all accounts, or at least by most accounts that I've read, he has never gotten over that. Does that jibe with anything you've heard?
Yeah, I mean, I've read the thing about the you know, fallen star joke, but right. I don't know. I would imagine there's something else behind that, because that's just like such a small, like, one-off thing, you know, like there has to be something else there as to why he is just kind of so against what SNL is at this point. You know, I didn't watch the SNL 40 last night. I'm going to try and catch it today. I watched the Russell Westbrook show in the All-Star game because I have terrible life decisions.
Sorry to cut you off, Sam, but to me, like, I don't get why anyone would want to watch the NBA All-Star game over the SNL thing. Like, to me, the NBA All-Star game doesn't, I'd never find it watchable, just because it's just, you know, it's fine. Like, dudes going, doing crazy stuff and all that. But like, when there's no pretense of any sort of defense, and like, it's fine, I guess, as a casual watch. But when you've got, you know, Norm MacDonald and Dana Carvey doing their thing, like, to me, it was kind of a no-brainer.
Well, you got to understand, Sam doesn't even probably know who Norm MacDonald and Dana Carvey are.
I know,
I mean, I mean, I know you know who they are, but you didn't grow up watching them.
You know, Norm MacDonald, like, one of my favorite SNL things is him playing Burt Reynolds.
Right.
Yeah, on, you know, they did that last night.
Like, they did it, and it was amazing.
It's so good.
But here's the other thing. Like, I just went to a bar with my girlfriend, and she has friends in from Australia. So we were just like, all right, we'll go to a bar and we'll fund and watch the All-Star game. So I figured, you know what, the SNL 40 thing, I can catch it today.
My thing was, it's worth it. You can fast forward, you know, through the stuff you want to fast forward through. My thing with the NBA All-Star game is, like, at least with the Major League Baseball All-Star game, you still got a guy trying to strike out another guy. Like, they're at least competing, you know? In the All-Star game, there's no – they're not really competing. They're just, like, seeing who can get going, who can – like, it's not –
Someone should have told Russell Westbrook that last
night. I know. He got going. Zach LaVine, though, that was pretty cool Saturday night.
That was ridiculous.
I was telling everyone, I did a couple of radio spots on Saturday, like before the slam dunk contest. I was like, you should watch the dunk contest. Zach LaVine is going to do something that we haven't seen before.
He did.
He's unbelievable. He was put on this earth to dunk. He's not a good basketball player yet, like on an NBA level. Like, he's obviously a good basketball player, like within the realm of humans. But just generally, like on an NBA level, he's still not a very good basketball player, but he can do that, and that will make him a lot of money for a while.
No, he was great. We wrapped up a Valentine's Day dinner and then went to a little bar next to the restaurant that we were at. And I was like, happy Valentine's, sweet pea. Now let's go watch Zach LaVine dunk for a little bit and have a late night drink. And so we did that. It was worth it. Like, I don't know how it ranks in all time, whatever, but. I remember the Vince Carter one, and then and I remember the early one, like the Jordan one, all that. But like by the people, according to the people who do follow this type of stuff, it's like Vince Carter 1, Zach LaVine 2, maybe all time dunk contest. Yeah. So if you haven't seen that yet, go. You can find the vines.
I would put it like Carter 1, Jason. I said I would still put Jason Richardson's over because he did it twice. And just the sheer, like, quantity of awesome dunks that Jason Richardson has in the dunk contest is incredible. Like, he did that, like, reverse between the legs dunk before anyone else did it. And he is the most underappreciated dunker, I think, of maybe ever, to be honest. He is awesome. He was so good at that.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it yet, it's worth your time. You can find the vines again pretty much anywhere. All right, let's get out of here. Remember, you can subscribe to the Island College Basketball Podcast over on iTunes. The quickest way to get the latest episode. So go do that, and either way, I will talk to you again on Wednesday. Take care.